everyone, and happy Friday once again. Today, I am on my own. I'm accountant in residence and founder of the Corporate Finance Network, and I'm Kirsty McGregor. I'm normally joined by my co-host, Alex Clark, but he's handed the reins over to me this morning and trusted me to do this interview on my own. So I'm welcoming James Moore, Director of Converter. Morning, James. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Kirsty. Thank you for having me.
Now then, let's get straight into it. So please explain to our audience, who are Converter? What do you do?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me and good morning, everybody. So I'm a director in Converter. I'm also a director in Cooler Hub. So Converter is a lead generation specialist, a business development specialist agency that has worked across multiple sectors, but more recently in the past few years, moving into professional services, because we felt that it was a sector that could do with our specialist business development skills. And I suppose those development skills are born out of three key areas. So database generation, database management, targeting, segmentation, understanding who an audience for professional services firms is, digital marketing to enable the audience to understand, reach, and engage with the content and materials that our professional services clients are putting out, and telephony. So telephony is direct outreach, business development, talking to businesses who may want to engage with those practices and those firms. So we've been working for 10 years. We have a staff of 42, and we work across those three key areas. 4 years ago, we bought a controlling stake in a CRM platform called Cooler Hub. And the reason why we bought that is because data forms the lifeblood of all our activity and all of our campaigns. If we don't get data right, and we don't get marketing right, the communications right, and the reporting right, everything else falls by the wayside. So we've been working with some national professional services firms on the accountancy side, also on the legal side as well. We find that there's a degree of similarity between the requirements for accountancy and legal firms, and fundamentally they want to talk to the same people broadly in the same way. So we've had a success working in corporate finance, audit, due diligence, tax campaigns for those clients.
So what fascinates me is that I know in the profession, the biggest challenge, without doubt, for virtually every firm from the smallest to the largest multinational is the lack of resource that they have and lack of capacity that they have because they're struggling to recruit and retain staff in the accountancy profession at the moment. Hopefully that will change again over a period of years, but that's definitely the biggest challenge at the moment. So when accounting firms are so busy, and you know, I heard you talking about corporate finance, of course, an area I know very well, and advisory, and it completely rings true to me that we should be building pipeline for that type of work because there's so much scope, and we just have only just scratched the surface, usually with businesses around that area. But you're also doing audit campaigns and tax compliance and tax planning campaigns, so. That then, you know, leads me to ask you a question. How are you? I mean, you're obviously very successful at it, but you wouldn't still be here after 10 years and have 40 odd staff. How are you managing to kind of engage accountants in this type of work now? You know, why is it still important for them to look at their marketing and direct marketing in particular when they have got more work than they can handle, actually?
Yeah, it's a good question, Kirsty. I think the early stage discussion that we had in this space, there was a degree of sort of scepticism as to why the requirement was necessary. You know, given the sort of age old traditional new business development programs that they would run, things like events and referrals. But then COVID happened, and it turned the world upside down, and people couldn't meet each other in those sorts of ways. So networking events, you know, the sort of golf course approach was no longer applicable. So therefore, the firms that we were talking to, and certainly the partners within those firms, were looking for new ways and recognised that new ways were needed to engage an audience, not for now, but for future. So you're absolutely right, Kirsty. The key word there is pipeline development. And you know, when over the COVID period, sort of 3 years, you couldn't go out and meet people, you couldn't hold events particularly well. Sure, we had technology to assist and enable us, but people still fundamentally buy from people. So when that sort of the world turned upside down and we couldn't go and meet people, we did find that there was a degree of sort of scratching around to understand how firms could go out and build a pipeline. So we were talking to businesses at that time saying, we think that the professional services sector, accountancy firms, lawyers, did approach marketing or sales, I suppose, in a quite reactive way. You know, business comes to you naturally, but when business doesn't come to you, and there is always a when, not an if, you know, how are you going to go out and be proactive to engage with the market? Do you understand what the market is? Because a lot of firms just, you know, they're happy to open the doors and it naturally gravitates towards them, referrals from other clients, from other sectors. So the discussions we had were based around our work in the non-professional services sectors. So things like industry, things like IT, financial services, where there is a greater degree of awareness around the need to build viable, visible, touchable sales pipelines. So you can start to predict and project what income and revenue might look like downstream for new business. Because when you know, certainly I suppose in the corporate finance space, when a business sells out, that's the end of the transaction, really. So how do you go about filling that transaction pipeline back up again? So the only real way is to be proactive. And actually, pre-COVID, we were having those conversations saying you need to be moving out and talking to people and understanding your market and getting the pulse of the market in advance of doing a deal. Because doing a deal, as we all know, takes a long time, you know, and we don't just wait for a client to pick up the phone and say, actually, I'm interested in selling, can you help me? That, you know, rarely happens. I'm sure it does, but not really. So then COVID hit, and therefore there was a requirement for firms and partners we were talking to actually be more proactive and to go out into the marketplace and have those conversations, to start building awareness of those of the services that they could provide. And certainly, I suppose, in the corporate finance space, you know, those early stage conversations don't revolve around the end transaction. They revolve around business planning, succession planning, exit strategies. Then moving through, you know, services like, you know, valuations and financial due diligence and getting a business ready to sell. And that, as we all know, can typically take 2, 3, 4 years, you know, in certain instances. Rarely is there a sort of, it drops into the hat at sort of 2 or 3 weeks to go and someone says, can you help me sell my business? It doesn't happen. So therefore the pipeline requirement is not a short-term requirement. And therefore anyone who's got a short-term view of the market, frankly, is a little bit blinkered. And I think a lot of the firms we were talking to, and certainly the firms we've been working with in the city and nationally, and some of the regional firms as well, not just in corporate finance, but certainly in the tax planning stages, there is a medium to long-term view is required to build that pipeline. So you've got a regular flow of deals that are coming into your business that will yield downstream revenue. However, the requirement is if you start talking to them early enough, there will be services that you can provide and offer in the lead up to transactions. So you might well be building a pipeline that will yield transaction in 2 years' time, 3 years' time. But through building those early stage discussions and requirements, you can start to help a business get ready for sale. And during that process, you can then provide them with the services and invoices that enable them to transact at the end point. So really, the key point here, moving back to your question, Kirsty, is pipeline. And pipeline in this space needs to be viewed as a medium to long-term project. And that is where the proactive approach to getting a targeting approach right of the sort of businesses that you want to talk to, rather than them coming to you, you need to now go to them, because competition is fierce, certainly in the regions and nationally, certainly with acquisitions happening at a national level. The requirement is not to just sit back and wait for it to come to you. It is to go to it.
Mm. Yeah, certainly hear the message. And it reminds me of the Bain study that we refer to in capitalized quite often, which is very relevant at the moment because we do like to really understand the macro economy and what's going on longer term with SMEs, and also realizing and recognizing that there is a massive time lag with SMEs. You know, they don't react like the large corporates do, and they take time to make decisions and time to change. And the Bain study was actually looking at previous recessions. And although we're going to be in a very strange recession here, aren't we? We're in a very long drawn out recession, but quite shallow, whereas, you know, previous recessions have been more extreme. But previous recessions have shown that, you know, the most successful companies, and there will be companies that come out of recessions more successful long term, those are the ones that, in part, one of the things that they did was continue their marketing and not cut their marketing spend, and looking longer term and taking advantage of opportunities where others fall by the wayside, don't they? And I hear your point, the way you said they were looking for something new, the leadership teams of these professional services, accountants and lawyers. And I just smiled quite wryly because, ironically, telephone marketing is one of the oldest forms of direct marketing. But it is, you know, you've pivoted it, I suppose, in a way. You've brought a lot of digital elements into that package. And database resource, obviously, as you said at the beginning, is crucial. And so do you think it has to be, it can't just be a telephone campaign? There's got to be the digital elements. And what would that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose even, you know, referring back to the sort of, you know, as we crawl out of the post-pandemic, you know, sledgehammer, you know, the digital technologies that are available have exploded, really. And you know, you can't determine how a prospect is going to interact and engage with you. So they have to use a full gamut of all of the channels that are available to you. So, you know, 20, 30 years ago, the telephone was the critical business development channel or method. And it still is highly important because fundamentally we have to talk to people. And whether that's face-to-face over the telephone, then it's fundamental that we have that tool in our armor.
Because that allows you to personalize it, I suppose, doesn't it? You can have your generic materials on your website, on your social media and so on, but that conversation allows you to personalize what they need and direct your messaging better.
Completely, completely. And I suppose that where we come from now, having sort of joined the dots effectively between sales and marketing, and that's effectively what we do as a business. So yes, we are marketers, but yes, we are salespeople. And to quote an old advertising master in David Ogilvy, the only purpose of advertising is to sell. And really, we as a business have positioned ourselves very much so, excuse me, at the sharp end of the marketing process towards the sales end. So joining the dots between the sales and marketing absolutely now in this world has got to include a thorough and detailed understanding of how businesses and business leaders and prospects and owners engage, research, fact find, and actually hold you at arm's length until they're ready to talk to you. And then, so therefore, the digital space is critical because that's where the fact finding and research happens. So optimizing websites for keywords, understanding how to use paid advertising online to bring an audience into you. Now, even though that audience comes into you, into your website, onto your LinkedIn pages, and engages with the things that you're saying, they don't necessarily want to engage at that point in time. So we have to understand how to track those movements online and build a clear picture of what a prospect is looking for, looking at, how long they're looking at it. So in other words, assessing their appetite and interest in the services that you want to sell them. At that point, we then escalate into voice because we have tools and technologies that enable us to track people's movements and therefore score their appetite effectively. And that enables us to prioritize who to talk to in the offline environment. So absolutely, tracking, understanding, tracking, refining online, then moving to an offline environment, making sure everything is recorded in our CRM platform, in our database, so we've got a very clear picture. So then we can then move into email marketing and then the more direct communications using the telephony in a business development environment. You know, asking for permission to have those discussions, those early stage discussions, and then qualifying those opportunities through what is, a fairly old mechanic called BANT, which is budget, authority, need, and timing. So we're assessing actually whether there is a real interest, whether the person we're talking to is the critical decision maker, what their time frame might be. It might be now, it might not be now, it might be in 2 years' time. And then when we have a qualified opportunity that maybe come in through the digital space, escalated through into the direct telephony space, making sure that that conversation, and I say conversation, there might have been multiple touch points in that journey, online and offline. Once they're ready to commit to an opportunity or an appointment, then making sure all of the elements that we've gathered through the digital space and through the telephony space are combined into a fully qualified opportunity, then moves into our client's pipeline. So absolutely, critically, joining the dots between data, digital, and dialogue.
And it's a combination, isn't it, of science and stats and data and then psychology and actually having that personalized approach as well. And I guess that's the thing, you know, every business owner, every leader is different in the way that they'll respond to information and the fact finding that they'll do. So you do have to have the whole gamut because you've got to be able to cater for everybody at the early stage, at the top of the funnel, and then bring them down into the, you know, those that are more likely to buy. So you're working obviously a lot across lots of different firms and lots of different products. Give us some tips about, you know, what's hot at the moment. What are business owners responding to? What are they wanting to hear accountants talking about? What's making them move from one firm to another, or from no firm even? Some accountants, yeah, are, you know, working for the, you know, not even some businesses, I mean, are not even having accountants at all, are they? So actually, to engage an accountant, for example, for their tax, where, you know, where are they seeing the need for investment and taking a chance to move an accountancy firm?
Yeah, absolutely. We've worked in this space for a number of years, and I reference tax specifically, where there's historically a set of boutique firms effectively sort of came up sort of maybe 10-15 years ago in a certain tax space, and those boutique firms saw an opportunity and, you know, went aggressively into the market, you know, certainly tackling the SME space and I suppose the enterprise space as well, and sort of saying we can save you lots of money. What we've seen working with some national clients and some regional clients in the tax space is actually a recoil from some of those boutiques because they were almost becoming pests and
aggressive. Yeah, and it's aggressive. Makes people nervous, aggressive. Aggressive tax planning now, doesn't it? The mood has changed, isn't it? And HMRC's approach obviously is
absolutely. And HMRC are now, you know, actively you know, going back out into the market to you know, to discredit some of these boutique firms. So what firms? So the businesses that we're engaging with, it's very much a soft sell, and it's actually about conversation. We actually call it conversion through conversation. Mm. We're not trying to pitch anything. We're trying to ask questions and understand what people's fears and anxieties and challenges are. And then if we can match a set of services that overcome those in a conversational manner, then they're much more likely to want to engage with you. But they want proof, and they want compliance issues, which the big accountancy firms, you know, and a proper accountancy firm can provide. They want evidence points that you can say you do what you say you can do. So things like testimonials and case studies are really still very important to provide the evidence and proof, because, you know, lots of SMEs are really quite mistrusting, out there. And you have to build confidence, and building confidence through demonstration of capability is really critical. You know, in this space, you know, it's fine. You can tell me you can do all these things, but prove it. Don't tell me, show me. And that's a really important, facet when we're when we're in the early stage conversations that we have with business owners and financial directors and controllers on behalf of our clients, you know, they want to know who you're working with and how successful you've been and what the typical length of relationships are. That's also, you know, very important, because no one wants to move from one, you know, out of the frying pan into the dishwasher to find that the service is simply no better.
Yeah.
So evidence points are really very important, but also not overly selling, understanding what the challenges are and actually saying, we might be able to help you with that, we may not be able to. So honesty and integrity are absolutely critical in everything we do.
Interesting. And do you find specific things like, you know, I'm thinking about the audit regulations nowadays mean that if you're an auditor, you can't work with that client with contingent fees, for example. So something like R&D tax credits, corporate finance, which in the past may well have been a contingent fee, firms are having to have different discussions with their audit clients about that, or lose the audit, or the, you know, the business owners choosing themselves to move. So is there, and obviously, you know, it's very much happening in the large firms where they're being asked to split their audit and their advisory departments. So businesses even. So are you finding that there is a move of different audit clients around now? Is there quite a lot of transition around with accountancy firms?
Yeah, absolutely. We recently undertaken an audit campaign for a firm in Yorkshire. You know, successfully delivering almost too much work for them 2 years ago and built a pipeline, but that pipeline is still yielding. And the reason why we were talking to them in the first place was because they saw the opportunity, because the big firms had to drop audit. Yeah. There was conflict of interest, and also the regulator was hit coming down hard on them. So there was a trickle down of audit into more regional medium sized players, and they saw that opportunity and went for it. But there's a clear distinction between the requirements for audit and corporate finance, because there might well be a conflict of interest there if you're advising on audit and tax. But you're trying to also position the business in the best way it can be for evaluation and a sale. Then the two conversations do need to be split, and it's quite difficult. And we're quite clear that if we undertake a campaign for audit or for tax planning services, then we should not be talking to somebody else. If we're in advanced discussions, we shouldn't be talking about CF because, you know, there is a potential conflict of interest. But there's an awful lot of audit work now dropping down, trickling down from the big firms, national firms, into the regional players, which I think is a good thing.
Inevitable, yeah, and it's a real opportunity for those regional firms to get some system in place so that they're winning some of this. And I suppose the other area I was thinking as well, which I would be interested to hear how it's going down with business leaders. And I take my hat off to you, by the way, because getting past gatekeepers and getting to the decision makers and having them open their hearts and listening to you about talking about their business, you know, things closest to them. I mean, it must be a real skill. But I was interested, yeah, how are they responding to conversations about general business advisory? You know, is it because we in Capitalize, obviously that's what we do, corporate finance that I do is also advisory. But I often hear general practice accountants say, my client's not going to take that from me. They don't want that work. They don't want the business planning. They don't want the forecasting. They don't want the growth strategies. They don't want the exit planning. And I just think that's untrue. You know, I think from my experience, they absolutely do. And and accountants, you know, need to have the confidence to have those conversations. So are you finding that business owners are open to listening? And is that differentiating firms between just the compliance services and then the wider business growth support that firms can offer?
Yeah, excuse me. I think I'll come back to your point at the beginning around getting past the gatekeepers first.
Yeah.
I think that is worth dwelling on. It's not, hello, can I speak to Mr. Moore, please? Yes, certainly, I'll put you through. What are you doing?
Not anymore, no.
that doesn't work. It is a tenacious process, and it involves all of the channels getting through. So LinkedIn, content on LinkedIn, engagement with LinkedIn, email marketing, telephony, digital marketing, all of these tools are really critical, because we don't, you know, we're practiced at getting past gatekeepers, and we have very thick skin. You know, we understand that most people are going to say no to us. But when we do get through, I think the critical thing here is asking questions. So ask first, shoot later. Too many businesses and firms think that they're just because they've got through, they can pitch and they're going to succeed. You know, that's the absolutely wrong attitude. And you know, I'm, as a business owner myself, I have a degree of ego. So if someone wants to just pitch at me and sell to me, then I'm not really interested, because no one's thought about what my business is about, what my motivations might be. So you have to get under the skin of a person first. So to your point earlier about psychology, absolutely is that. So we try and establish what we call golden fields in our data. So this is about understanding, profiling a firm, a business, understanding what the management structure might look like, the management profile, and then trying to establish, you know, what interests and motivates them. So we try and capture sort of minimum four or five pieces of data that you can't buy anywhere. You can only find that data by asking questions of people, hence conversion through conversation. But when we actually start talking to people, we build confidence and trust, and we start engaging with them. And by the way, this might be across 2, 3, 6, 12 months, because this is the medium to long-term view of life. You know, we don't just, it's not a one-hit wonder. It's a nurture process. It's a confidence building process. When we start unwrapping, you know, and removing the armor from people, we find they're actually quite happy to talk. Not give us, you know, war and peace, but give us nuggets of information that enable us to then go back to our clients and say, actually, you know, the concern here isn't the service offering. It's the timing. And so therefore, you know, timing is an issue, then you need to be talking to them about something else. So you want to talk to them about, you know, doing a deal. They're not ready to do a deal yet. Actually, they're in the process of revamping their management account or building the management team into a place so they can step back. So therefore, their considerations are not at this moment in time finite. They're preparatory. So therefore, you've got to start reconfiguring the way you approach this. And actually, the conversation that you might want to have with them isn't the one you thought you were going to have with them. So therefore, potentially bring in another partner or somebody else who can talk to them about the things that they want to talk about. Because really, this is about creating a wedge into that business. You create a wedge into that business, then you move in and broaden the wedge out, or, you know, essentially what we call land and expand. You know, create, go into with one service, understand what the business looks like, bring another specialist in or another partner who can then deliver that. Then you build confidence as a firm. So then moving towards that that finite transaction point is much easier, because you've got confidence across multiple disciplines: audit, tax planning, business succession planning, and then corporate finance, or even restructuring. So the key thing is here, people are willing to talk, but they might not just buy it from one person. One person might be able to suggest, but then bring in your lieutenants who can talk to them about other things. That builds confidence that you've got that the capability and credibility across a firm, not just as an individual.
Fascinating. Well, I could talk about this for hours, because I just think it is fascinating. But so I really appreciate you sharing some of the little nuggets of expertise that you've got there across the business and in this area of direct marketing and, as you say, sales and marketing being brought together. But I've got one last question for you, which I haven't prepared you for, but it's the question that we ask all of our guests. This is the Future Positive podcast. So we always ask, what excites you about the future?
I think that's a very good question. What excites me about the future is that it's moving into a new space. We have to become much more commercially focused, because everything that we do, everything we touch is diversifying, but in terms of technology and capability, horizons have changed significantly through, you know, through COVID and through the, you know, the economic downturn at the moment. And so I think there is a degree of I suppose movement and excitement in the marketplace. There's probably a degree of hunkering down as well and trying to see what the future brings. But what we saw in COVID where the M&A market space, you know, exploded and then has settled down a little bit. I think that the underlying themes that were created through the pandemic, certainly within business owners, means that we're redressing our priorities. We're looking at what makes us happy, and actually, you know, I think businesses in general will be a lot more fluid in terms of how they look at growth and exit strategies, certainly for management teams. So I think there's a great deal more fluidity, and I think that. That enables opportunity for those firms and businesses that want to be proactive. I think being reactive is no longer a steady state, and I think it's firms who be reactive and businesses that are reactive will simply miss out, because there will be firms who are now who will be more dynamic and go to the market waiting for it to come to them.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I think there's the quality is going to rise to the top, and it's great that those firms are going to be able to differentiate themselves from the rest of the market, and you know, companies like yours are really helping with that. Look, it's been great to talk to you today. Thank you ever so much for your time. Where are people going to be able to find out more about you and Converter if they want to have a more in-depth chat about their own firm?
thank you for having me, Kirsty. I'm on LinkedIn. If you search James Moore Converter on LinkedIn, if anybody wants to connect with me or ask any questions, my email is j.moore@converta.co.uk, and our website is converta.co.uk.
Fantastic. So that wraps up this episode. And for those that are new to Capitalize, our vision is to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over their own business finance, so every business can identify the risks that they might face, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and choose the best funding for their business if funding is indeed what they need. For those of you that don't already, don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and all good podcast platforms. And please do go back and listen to our complete back catalogue of episodes, over 50 now, some fantastic interviews with people from across the finance, accounting, tech, and wider business space. And for more about the Future Positive podcast and Capitalize, please check out capitalize.com. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, we will be back next week with the Capitalize Breakfast Show, and I will be back with Alex. And then we'll have another brilliant interview in 2 weeks' time. So thank you for listening. Thank you, James. Have a great day, everybody. And go and plan those campaigns. How exciting.